them specifically if they realized or acknowledged they didn't have the power to indict, both under the Justice Department memo, which gives them their power, in essence, confines their power, mm-hmm. and under the Constitution. And he said, well, he wouldn't answer. And one of his assistants said they acknowledged they had to be bound by Justice Department policies. And then the next day or the day after, they clarified it for Jay Sekulow, who was with me at the meeting, that they didn't have the power to indict.
Something happens to second-term presidents. It almost seems like because they've been there for 4 years, and part of the argument that gets made when you run for the presidency is that you've got the experience. Well, hell, nobody is more ready to be president than somebody who has already been president for 4 years. A lot of presidents heading into their second term tend to treat the pomp and circumstance and all the formalities that they have to go through to run for president again. They tend to drag their feet a little bit. Oh, my, why do I have to do this? I'm already president. Just keep me here forever, or at least for the next 4 years. 1984 was no exception when Ronald Reagan debated Walter Mondale. It's been referred to from contemporaneous reports as a sleepwalk, and everybody remembers it as an absolutely terrible debate. When Ronald Reagan ran for president in 1980, he was fierce. But in 1984, in the very first debate, he just sort of dragged around. He seemed uninterested. He didn't have great answers. And as a result, he dropped 7 points in the polls from that one debate. Quoting here, Reagan knew it was bad. Soon as he left the stage, reports Lou Cannon in President Reagan, Reagan confessed to advisor Stu Spencer that he had flopped. According to Jack German and Jules Whitcover, when Mondale left the stage, he confided to an aide that guy is gone, as in mentally not all there. 2 days after the debate, RNC Chairman Paul Lexalt held a press conference admitting that Reagan had blown it, but it wasn't because of any physical or mental deficiency. He was brutalized by a briefing process that didn't make any sense. Why mention mental deficiency? Because the drive-by media was covering the debate that way? Bringing on mental health experts to ask what the hell happened to Reagan, a Newsweek Gallup poll found 54% of debate watchers giving the victory to Mondale and only 35% giving it to Reagan. Now, we know how everything turned out. Eventually, Reagan went on to win that year. And not just win quite handily. Just about every single state, if I'm not mistaken. But at the time, it was full-scale panic in the Reagan camp. This piece of history has been recently referred to. In 2012, when Barack Obama ran for president for his second term, there was a debate that he had against Mitt Romney. And I watched the debate beginning to end, and it was pretty damn clear he didn't understand why he had to be there. It's not just him. A lot of second-term presidents do this. Come on, you guys. I've been here 4 years. Let's knock it off, okay? And they can feel that way because incumbents tend to win. The very next day, the talk was about how he blew the debate, and he's probably going to lose the election. And my God, one-term Obama. But he had a rally in Wisconsin the next day, and it was packed to the gills, so much so not everybody could get inside. So everything turned out okay for him. But when Reagan had his disastrous debate, his team decided that something had to be done. They went ahead and pushed the panic button right away. One of those folks was a gentleman named Lee Atwater. If you know anything about Lee Atwater is both openly racist and a pretty decent blues guitarist. But he had no problem turning up what was referred to as the fog machine. So, when Reagan flopped in that first debate, and of course he got progressively better in the next couple debates, and went on to win the presidency again handily. But when he lost that debate at the time, Atwater said, that's it. We're not even going to wait. Who cares if things get better? It's time for us to turn on the fog machine. It's time for us to not just ask people to make a choice, but tell them that they've got a choice to make, and they damn well better make the right choice.
When Ronald Reagan had that first debate with Walter Mondale, and he actually lost the debate badly, and the Wall Street Journal, top of the fold, said, this guy may be losing, and Howard Baker said, this is the guy we meet all the time in the office. There's something wrong here. Lee Atwater, the dark prince of this thing, said, if we lose one more debate, this president could be finished. Mm-hmm. So if he does lose the second debate, we're going to create the fog machine. We're going to get all the facts off the table, Reagan's competence off the table. It's going to be, what side are you on, boys and girls? What side are you on? And so what they're doing is the fog machine. They want to change the question from the evidence of these cases, whether it's Manafort or any of these other guys, and change the question to, do you like Trump or do you like these Democrats in the media? Right. And I think that's what they're pumping up that debate, because they know they can't win on the facts.
And that's exactly what's begun happening now. The Trump administration is not just acting guilty and looking guilty. They are beginning to effectively use the words saying, yeah, okay, fine, we're guilty. There is an article over at The Atlantic, headline, Why Do Trump's Defenders Assume That He's Guilty? Quoting here, allies of President Trump have made some peculiar comments over the last few days, as Jonathan Shiat, Josh Barrow, and Orrin Kerr wrote. Anthony Scaramucci says Michael Cohen could not flip on Trump because he's a very loyal person. Alan Dershowitz, enjoying a strange encore act as Trump's most prominent legal defender, told Politico, that's what they'll threaten with him. Life imprisonment. They're going to threaten him with a long prison term and try to turn him into a canary that sings. Jay Goldberg, who represented Trump in the 1990s and 2000s, told Trump that he needs to be concerned that Cohen will not be protecting. You have to be alert, Goldberg said. I don't care what Michael says, even Cohen. In his frantic effort to demonstrate his loyalty, has made the error, I'd rather jump off a building than turn on Donald Trump. Turn on him what exactly? A loyal person. Cohen has also said he would rather take a bullet. He'd take a bullet before he'd turn on Trump. He'd take a bullet for Trump. Why are all of these people that are surrounding him using the language saying, we're not going to turn on him. We're not going to go against him. What they could be saying is what Sarah Huckabee Sanders is saying from the podium all the time. Oh, he's innocent. He's innocent. He's innocent. But even Sarah Huckabee Sanders has begun using the language. Yeah, he can pardon himself. Oh, absolutely. He has the right. Why would he need to pardon himself? But there's the qualifier. She'll say he can pardon himself, but he doesn't have to because he didn't do anything wrong. But he can. He can definitely pardon himself.
You know, the saddest thing is that because I'm the president of the United States, I am not supposed to be involved with the Justice Department. I'm not supposed to be involved with the FBI. I'm not supposed to be doing the kind of things that I would love to be doing. And I'm very frustrated by it.
Trump sees it as an absolute tragedy that he is being advised against firing his way through the Justice Department so that he can fire Mueller because he knows that he's guilty. About the only people not willing to admit that Trump is guilty are the oceans of dumbfounded dip S's that will stick by him no matter what. 50 million people, 60 million people that would also likely take a bullet for him. It's so strange because he's so dumb. Don't understand how we got here. But there are millions of people that would absolutely fall on a sword or absolutely die on a hill for this guy. And it's not just them. It's not just the people that voted for Donald Trump. It's lots of other people too. When Giuliani was hired to be his head lawyer, Giuliani was not hired because he's such a fantastic lawyer. He was hired because he's willing to be a pit bull for Donald Trump. He's willing to get out there in the media. He's willing to parrot the talking points. And Giuliani's even gotten to say some of the things that Trump has been unable to say. Yeah, he paid Stormy Daniels. So what? Oh, by the way, Stormy Daniels looks like a dog. Stormy Daniels is beneath him. The things Trump wants to say, but cannot say for any number of reasons. And you may say, yeah, that's childish. They're out there, they're name calling. And Giuliani's admitting to these things that he's done. It's not going to work. People are too smart. I like to think that. I like to think that my fellow Americans are too smart. But I know better. 2016. And the things that Giuliani is doing in the media are working. The things that Trump are saying on Twitter are working. And even though this president couldn't be more guilty and is even beginning to use the language of a guilty person, the polls are moving in his direction, and not just the opinion polls, but what people think of the Russia investigation, what people think of the Mueller investigation. The stuff that they're doing is working. And so now, since all of those numbers are beginning to move in their direction, they go, let's start throwing out some more crazy pants stuff, because why not?
They are a group of 13 highly partisan Democrats that make up the Mueller team, excluding him, are trying very, very hard to frame him, to get him in trouble when he hasn't done anything wrong.
Framing! Spygate! That's where we've moved now. And if you've paid any amount of attention to this, and I know how exhausting it is to pay attention to this. I absorb the news every day, lots and lots of it, and I still hear reporters say this all the time. They'll be talking about something that happened a few days ago, and somebody will stop and look around and go, whoa, that was this week? And that's the point. The way that the news is being unleashed, and it's not by the media, it's by Trump and his associates. The way that the news is being released, the way that it's flying at your head like 10,000 daggers, is supposed to make you just drop out and go, you know what? I can't do it. I can't keep up with it. And when you do that, your opinions begin to slide. You know what? Maybe Mueller is a partisan. You know what? 2016 was bad, but whatever. Let's get over it and let's move on. And that's not the way that we learn from history. So even though these lawyers, even though Trump and his people have begun using the language of guilt, effectively saying that, yeah, he's guilty, there are a few people on his team that are leaving themselves an escape hatch, warning the president in the media, because all he does is watch TV. He's not bright. He does not read. Warning the president on television, because they know that that's the best way that he's going to see it. They're leaving him an escape hatch saying, hey, these are things that you should not do. Yeah, we're out here shilling for you. We're out here lying for you. We're out here creating the fog machine for you. But Mr. President, be careful.
The president of the United States, pardoning himself would just be unthinkable, and it would lead to probably an immediate impeachment.
Listen, there's no way that'll happen, and the reason it won't is because it then becomes a political problem, George. If the president were to pardon himself, he'll get impeached.
So that's Giuliani and Chris Christie saying, okay, you can pardon yourself. Yes, you have the right to pardon yourself, but you should not pardon yourself. Which he's not going to listen to. When he gets indicted, he'll go ahead and he'll pardon himself, and they'll simply say, I told you so. They'll take their money. They'll walk the other way. It's stunning to me how many people are getting swept up in this, how many people are getting covered in the mud of this, and how many people will never really get to return to respectful society because of this. And now Trump is doing this thing with pardons. He's pardoned Dinesh D'Souza, a white supremacist. He pardoned Joe Arpaio, another white supremacist. But when he pardons these folks, he says that they were treated so unfairly, and I have to remedy that. Our justice system treated them so unfairly. And he can't spend enough time attacking the institutions of this government. He can't. And these are his people. When he attacks the Justice Department, those are his people. When he attacks the people at ICE, those are his people. He's attacking all of his own people. He's absolutely loyal to nobody. But these pardons. Oh, he likes this. He pardoned Jack Johnson, the dead boxer, which, okay, whatever. And recently, he's been talking about pardoning Muhammad Ali. He's going nuts with the pardon power. Bit of history here. Muhammad Ali effectively took a knee times 10,000. Muhammad Ali is not somebody that Donald Trump would have liked. And by the way, Muhammad Ali had his conviction overturned. He does not need a pardon. It wouldn't do it. It's not even symbolically, doesn't mean anything. But the president is going absolutely nuts with the pardon power right now. So much so that Papadopoulos, you remember this Papadopoulos guy that worked for the Trump campaign that pleaded guilty to lying and is now cooperating with the Mueller investigation? His wife is asking Donald Trump, going on television as much as humanly possible and asking Donald Trump for a pardon because she knows what it means. It doesn't mean anything. He'll just give them out, and he's doing this. Part of the reason that he's doing this is as a bright, shining light saying, hey, everybody that's in trouble right now, be cool, stay calm. When you're indicted, I will simply pardon you. Papadopoulos is a cooperating witness at this time. He likely won't do a lot of time, if he does any at all. But even still, please give him a pardon. He made a stupid, drunken mistake, so and so, because she feels pretty good that he's going to get it, especially since Trump isn't running pardons through the normal processes that these pardons are run through. Guilty AF. And so now that we're in this spot where the president is again, and he did this right away, as soon as he was elected, we're in this spot where the president is talking about pardoning himself. Never before in history, the president talking about pardoning himself, because that's what innocent people do. And the media, and this is why Trump hates the media so much, the media has begun a pretty aggressive pushback, not just on this, but on Sarah Huckabee Sanders herself.
Sarah, let me ask you if I can. Does the president believe that he is above the law?
Certainly not. The president hasn't done anything wrong.
The question isn't if he's done anything wrong. I guess the question is, does the president believe the framers envisioned a system where the president couldn't pardon himself, where the president could be above the law?
Certainly the Constitution very clearly lays out the law. And once again, the president hasn't done anything wrong, and we feel very comfortable on that front.
I know, but you just a moment ago said it's not that clear. So I guess simply put, does the president believe he is above the law?
Certainly no one is above the law. Vivian, go ahead.
If I can't follow, just
sorry,
I have,
no, I'm going to keep going right here.
I just want to ask you, this is an important one, because it's about, I'll just keep asking if I can.
Peter, the president, no, you can actually.
Well, actually, I'm going to, Sarah. I think this is important.
You're going to hear a lot of Sarah Huckabee Sanders in this show today. She is really losing her audience. So that's Pete Alexander from NBC News saying, no, I'm sorry. This isn't just a dumb question about boxers or briefs or his favorite ice cream flavor. This is a serious question, and I'm going to keep asking it until you answer it, because Sarah, you're terrible at answering questions. So here's what's coming up in the next week. On June 15th, Paul Manafort is going to have to go in front of a judge, because it appears that Paul Manafort may be involved in witness tampering. June 15th is also the day that Michael Cohen has to turn over all of his papers to the Mueller team. So just how guilty this president is, just how guilty the people around him are, might become super duper apparent in the next week. Stay tuned.
Yeah, we're one step closer to being a third world power as of today. I mean, tariffs and pardons. These are things that we see from banana republics, yeah. Right? I mean, these are when authoritarians take charge in elections and then go after their political opponents and help out their political allies. This is destroying the whole idea of independent justice, whether it's pushing on Sessions or the Rod Rosenstein issue that we're talking about, or in this case, just throwing around pardons based on personal connections and celebrities.
The banana Republicans. Never have I heard a more accurate phrase, banana Republicans. And it's not because they like bananas so much, although I suppose they could. So here's what we're looking at. All the things that gentleman pointed out right there, all right? Not separating from the Justice Department, helping his political friends. And then, of course, the tariffs. It turns out that what America First is turning out to mean is America alone. We are being increasingly isolated in the world. Now, I understand that in the previous administration, in the Obama administration, conservatives loved to point out that we were going in alone in the world because we are losing the respect of the world. And under Donald Trump, we are getting that respect back. And it goes like this. Donald Trump broke a deal that was brokered by the previous administration and now believes that he can get a better deal, and not just that, they're totally going to believe in it because nobody noticed when he broke the other deal. You shouldn't do everything that the last administration did, but you have to understand that when you make a move, America's credibility is at stake. The trade deals. Yeah, these trade deals aren't awesome. To say that the trade deals that we have are beneficial to Americans, deals are give and take. You don't get 100% of everything. That's not a deal. It's a theft. You're just taking. Deals, you get a little, I get a little, you lose a little, I lose a little, but we have an agreement. We have a deal. That's the way these things work. And although we could definitely negotiate better deals than we have right now, this is absolutely not the way to do it. The headline at the New York Times, the White House to impose metal tariffs on the EU, Canada, and Mexico. Dig this. We share a continent with two of these, Canada and Mexico. And he is attacking these two countries the hardest. So the first shots have been fired in the trade war that is going to be so easy to win. Our relationship has with the leaders of Canada and Mexico, and it's in our best interest. We share a continent with them. It's not been bad. You know, we've got our issues at times, but and especially with Canada, we really don't have a problem with Canada. And so for the president to so ferociously attack Canada, Trudeau was just beside himself.
Let me be clear. These tariffs are totally unacceptable. For 150 years, Canada has been the United States' most steadfast ally. From the beaches of Normandy to the mountains of Afghanistan, we have fought and died together. We have to believe that at some point, common sense will prevail. But we see no sign of that in this action today by the U.S. administration.
One of the more stunning things that came out of this phone call that the president had with Trudeau was pointing out, look, we are your closest trading partners. We've not had an adversarial relationship. I don't understand why you're doing this. And according to the Washington Post, as well as 1,000 other outlets, Trump, who is completely ignorant about U.S. history, actually said, hey, didn't you guys burn down the White House? Holy F. All right. So I became aware of this story many years ago. When I read the book, I didn't learn about this in school for whatever reason, but when I read the book Weird History, said the White House that's there, it's not the White House that's always been there. Well, clearly it's been modified over the years. But it said that in the War of 1812, the British, yes, the British, burned down the White House. So somehow, Trump heard that story, and he's not too bright. He doesn't read. And decided to conflate it with the time that he heard that the White House had been burned down, which he probably heard when he was getting a tour of the White House. He heard that it got burned down. He gets on the phone with Trudeau and he goes, "You guys burned down the White House." Actually, it would be another, and this is from the War of 1812. Actually, it would be another 50 years before Canada would become a country. So what's Trump's he clearly has no idea what he's doing. So what is his explanation about this? He says this is about national security. Let's talk about that. He's doing this for national security reasons. And so Trudeau says, "I'm sorry, we're not a threat. I don't understand how this has anything to do with national security." And he says the same thing about Mexico and the EU. He says, "Oh, this is all about national security." Now peep this. This is the same president that colluded with the Russians, had his son meet with them in Trump Tower in the summer of 2016 to get disparaging information about Hillary Clinton. That right there. Okay. And then after he was elected, invited the Russians into the White House, kicked out all of the American media. And the only reason we know about this story is because of leaks. Kicked out the American media, invited in a bunch of Russians and said, "Hey, I just fired Comey. That's going to end the Russia investigations. The Russians and the Russian media were allowed there. This guy is so concerned about national security." And then there's this. I've mentioned this before. The president uses an unsecured phone. If you're the president, you do not get to use your personal cell phone anymore. You need to use something that is issued by the White House, something that has a good firewall, and something that does not call out, something that does not connect to outside networks, because if it does, it can be hacked. And if it can be hacked, then, you know, people can call through to you that aren't supposed to. Somebody can take over your social media accounts and start putting out official statements. Because remember, whatever the president says on social media is an official statement from the president and the White House. And this president, to this day, refuses to use the phone, refuses to use a secured phone, something cleared by the White House, something that in the interest of national security would not put us all at risk.
Two senior administration officials tell Politico that President Trump uses a cell phone that is not equipped with security features designed to shield his communications, a departure, of course, from the practice of his predecessors that potentially exposes him to hacking and surveillance. The president uses at least two iPhones, according to one of the officials, one capable only of making calls, the other equipped only with the Twitter app, and preloaded with a handful of news sites. The phones are issued by White House Information Technology and the White House Communications Agency, an office staffed by military personnel that oversees White House communications. While aides have urged the president to swap out the Twitter phone on a monthly basis, Trump has resisted that, telling them it was too convenient. The same administration official said, too inconvenient. The same administration official said.
And while he's out there waging this massive trade war, that, by the way, nobody's going to win and you're going to pay more for everything on. So whenever something like that is happening, there's always something happening in the background that isn't getting as much attention as it should. The brutality, the absolute brutality of the administration. When Barack Obama was president, you heard it from every corner of the conservative media about the FEMA camps. He's going to come around and he's going to invade Texas and he's going to scoop up all the conservatives, all the God-loving conservatives. And he's going to put us in camps and they're going to turn us into liberals. And oh my God. And of course, it was all BS and none of it was ever true. And it was completely made up and so on and so forth. So here, what we have are really those kinds of camps. Retail spaces in America, because of online shopping And I think people just aren't as in love with the retail experience as they used to be. There are a lot of abandoned retail buildings now. Old Walmarts and old Sears and old JCPenney's and Montgomery Ward's. There's all these old, empty, gigantic buildings that used to just be huge retail meccas. And what the government has done, implemented a policy of ripping children away from their parents when they cross into the country, taking them from their parents, which, by the way, is horribly traumatic. We'll get to that in just a minute. And these buildings, these old empty buildings, these old shops, have been fitted with cages and detention areas. And they're pretty clear about this. The administration is pretty clear about this. The reason that they're doing this is to deter people from showing up to America, seeking asylum, trying to immigrate, any of that. They said this is to stop them from coming in. But whenever reporters ask, excuse me, Mr. President, why are you doing this? Do you not realize that this is a form of terror? He says it's the Democrats. This is the Democrats' policy. If the Democrats would simply stop this policy, then it would all be over. What is he talking about? He wants the Democrats to vote for his damn wall. That's it. He wants them to vote for money for his damn wall, the one that Mexico was supposed to pay for. He wants them to pay for. And because they won't get on board with it. And of course, if they get on board with it, when the money's spent and it's a complete failure, he's going to point to the Democrats and go, see, it's them. Blaming the Democrats for this policy when this is his administration's policy. Here, let me make it a little more clear. Jeff Sessions went on with Hugh Hewitt recently. And it's not just you and I that are grossed out by this policy. Hugh Hewitt said to Sessions, hey, I'm sorry, do we really have to do this?
Is it absolutely necessary, General, to separate parents from children when they are detained or apprehended at the border?
Yes, you can't be given immunity to people who bring children with them recklessly and improperly and illegally. Both children are being well taken care of. Within 72 hours, they're taken to the Health and Human Services to be sure they're properly cared for.
They're being well taken care of. So there's an article. I'm not going to read the whole thing. I don't have time, but it's by Susan Hoy, a child development specialist. And she, in the headline of the article is Effects of Separation and Loss on a Child Development. What is happening to these children is going to last them their entire lives. When you are a child, the person that is supposed to protect you is your parents. That's what you see them as. When you move away from the nest and you become an adult and you become your own person, that's fine and dandy, just like candy and all the rest. But while you are a child, you need that security. And when that security is absent, it causes irreparable damage. It causes irreparable damage that never, ever goes away. And we don't have a good or effective medical system in this country. So we've heard a lot in the last week. There were two very high-profile suicides and 16,000 much lower-profile suicides. And one of them was the handbag designer, Kate Spade, and the other one was Anthony Bourdain from CNN. And both of them, very high, just the world is their oyster. They're doing just fine financially. And when they hung themselves, and they both hung themselves, people go, why? My God, you've got everything. Although their deaths have nothing to do with the Trump administration, it is a proven fact that suicides go up under conservative administrations, and that's not just here in America, that's all around the world. But what people don't understand is when your brain is broken, and if it's broken in childhood, as the old saying goes, as the twig is bent, so grows the tree. When your brain is broken in childhood, if it is not addressed with therapy and potentially medication, although there's really none that I like, it never, ever gets better. You end up in that state. At the point where your brain was broken, you end up in that state effectively for the rest of your life. I remember when Kurt Cobain killed himself in 1994. Of course, we began looking back. Why? Why did we lose this man that had everything? Everything. Why did we lose this man at 27 years old? And they went back and they went back and they go, you know what? From looking at interviews, you know, reading about him and his whole life, it seems his entire life changed when his parents divorced at 8 years old. In this article that I have by this child development specialist, she equates the separation of children from their parents as being the same as divorce. It can have a horribly traumatic effect. And then the kids are just stuck there for the rest of their days. What the Trump administration is doing is not just brutal, it's terror, and it's going to break these children. My kids come home all the time and tell me about the horribly racist and sexist things that they hear around the school, in the hallway, and around the playground. The horrible, and I go, oh my God, who is breaking all of these children? And I don't think, people don't see it that way. They think that these children are just meant to be little tiny versions of us. They're not. We're supposed to take our years of time on this planet, our years of experience, and we're supposed to pick out the bad parts, keep the good parts, instill that in our children. They move on. They live life. They make mistakes. They have children. They do the same thing. They pick, and we're supposed to get progressively better. But what are we doing? We're breaking our children. And when you're breaking your children, you're destroying your future. I am by no means wealthy. I, as a child, in poverty and abused, and I was definitely broken any number of different ways. Now I'm in a much better state. I've got a stable life, business, jobs, loving family. You know, I want for nothing, roof over my head, no debt. I'm doing so fantastic. But even now, I feel completely insecure. I feel like that nobody's got my back. I feel like no matter how much money I have, it's never going to be enough. All of those, even though everything has been remedied, all of those feelings that I had when I got broken, I still have all of those feelings to this day. It's never gotten better. So the Trump administration says, look, we're just doing this so that they understand. We're just doing this because they're criminals. And why do you give a damn about criminals?
It was completely disingenuous a moment ago when he said that this was, you know, when people break the law, when they violate the law, this is what happens. In some cases, people have technically committed a misdemeanor by crossing the border without authorization. But even other people who have broken no law, who have not crossed illegally, who have presented themselves to official border crossings, still get their children taken away. I wrote about Miriam, a woman who had her 18-month-old baby taken away when she had done everything perfectly properly.
What you do today will reverberate for the rest of their lives. You should be thoughtful about what you're going to do. And it's not just a bad thing happening. You're destroying people. You're destroying children. You're destroying them for the rest of their days if they're not taken care of. And considering the healthcare system that we have in this country, they will likely never be taken care of. Think when you get people to think about it in those terms. This isn't just children. This isn't just other people. We rise together, we fall together. You're destroying your own future. And you're conscious of it. And if you're not, then you need to be.
Democrats want to use it as a campaign issue. And I keep saying, I hope they do. I have to listen to Pelosi and these people saying, we have to respect them. They're human beings. They're not human beings. They're not human beings. And this is why we call the bloodthirsty MS-13 gang members exactly the name that I used last week. What was the name?
The American media, and rightfully so, came down on him like a bag full of hammers. Just you, what? Animals. And then he said, no, they are. I'm talking about MS-13. Wait. MS-13. When you say MS-13, what you're putting in people's heads is brown people. You know, you have a problem with MS-13. MS-13, by the way, an American gang started in Los Angeles. A result, arguably, about policies of Reaganomics, which have just annihilated the middle class in this country. And when you have poverty, and when you start breaking up families, that's where gangs come from. I used to live in San Diego. I used to live in the Sacramento area. I used to live in the San Joaquin Valley. And yeah, gangs are a problem. But where you have that kind of desperation, people began banding together. You want to know why that community doesn't really care for the police, because they don't see the police as an ally. They see the police as an adversary, because these policies that have just devastated families, They feel like the police are part of that problem, because, see, the police aren't the problem. They enforce the laws. It's right there. They enforce the laws. But even still, a lot in that community, and a lot of them are black and brown, have turned against the police. Because even though they're simply enforcing the laws, they see them as part of the reason that those laws are there. So if you want to solve the problem of MS-13, the Crips and the Bloods and all these others, and XIV. What you need to do is try to find a way to end poverty, not exacerbate it. And when you say MS-13, we know better. We know much better, because we know it's not about them. It's about black and brown people. And when you say, the media came down on him for calling Mexicans animals, he said, you know what? They are. And then that clip was from a recent rally. And in a recent rally, he goes, you know what? They are animals. And you know what's even more? They're not human beings. We've heard this kind of talk before from the leader of a country. God, love it. I can't remember which country that was, though. There's an article written by Donna Minkowitz. The headline, Election 2018 is Off to the Racists. And in the article, she goes on to describe any number of white nationalists and American Nazis that are running for office this year. There is an NBC report by Morgan Radford that's been going around. I'm just going to play it straight out for you, because it's one of the most stunning, because I've been hammering on this particular subject, not just the racism, but the rise of American Nazism and the rise of white supremacy and the white knights and the Ku Klux Klan in 2018. I've been talking about it for probably 2 years now on this program. And American media is finally looking around and going, holy hell, there are Nazis everywhere.
Hi, my name's Art Jones.
Arthur Jones is running for Congress in Chicago's 3rd District.
Do you think you have a shot at winning?
Listen, I wouldn't be in this if I didn't think I could win.
He's also one of at least 8 white nationalists running for state or federal office this year, according to the Southern Poverty Law Center.
I consider myself a white racialist.
Jones was a member of the American Nazi Party, who denies the Holocaust ever happened.
6 million Jews. Ridiculous.
Okay. He's also campaigning to keep Chicago's neighborhoods 90% white.
I think most white people want a white neighborhood.
Do you think that black people are genetically inferior?
The average IQ of a black person is about 20 points lower than the average IQ of a white person. Okay?
I went to Harvard.
All right. And you've got a lot of white blood in you, too.
Some white blood. I'm African American.
Well, that's where your intelligence is coming from, I think.
You think it comes from my white side?
I think so.
20,000 people voted for Jones in the March primary. And even though he ran uncontested, he'll be on the Republican ticket in November, a fact many locals find unbelievable.
And you want my vote?
No, I don't want your vote. I don't want idiots like you voting for me.
But Jones's supporters say he's exactly the kind of candidate they want to see in Washington.
Even Abraham Lincoln believed that the races should stay separated. He said there's too great a difference between the black and white races that they could possibly live together.
Do you feel that way?
I feel that way, too.
Anti-hate groups say the number of white nationalists running for office across the country this year is higher than ever before. Many of them running on the Republican ticket, like Patrick Little.
This monstrous nature of the Jewish people must be known to the public.
You think Jews are monsters?
As a group, they are definitely behaving as a monster, 100%.
Little is running for Senator Dianne Feinstein's seat in California and blames Jews for America's problems.
They do the bidding of a foreign power that has committed terrorist attacks against this country.
He says President Trump is talking to people like him.
Because he dog whistled about globalists, I didn't understand he was talking about Jews until after the election.
The state's Republican Party says it wants nothing to do with him and declined to speak with us on camera.
It should be a wake-up call. If these types of candidates are going to come out from under the rock, they need to be repudiated at the ballot box.
We're a nation of communists, atheists, crooks.
But their supporters say this is exactly what they think will make America great again.
It's not because we're racist. It's because we feel marginalized, and we're the ones who are being oppressed for being hardworking, average American citizens.
The National Republican Party has said that they want nothing to do with these guys, but they won't talk on camera. The local chapters of the Republican Party have said they want nothing to do with these guys, but they don't want to talk on camera. And the reason for that is pretty simple. This is seen, if they won't speak out about it, both the local and national GOP, the Republican Party, they won't speak out about it because they know that they will lose voters if they do that. So they don't mind that the Nazis are supporting the United States Republican Party. They don't mind that the Ku Klux Klan, white nationalists and anti-Semites are supporting the United States Republican Party as long as the United States Republican Party wins. That's all that matters. It's time. It's probably long past time that the United States Republican Party is recognized for what it is. And what it is a hate group. Southern Poverty Law Center isn't willing to go that far just yet. But I submit this to you. The headline: military base calls immigration agents on a pizza delivery man. So this hit happened in Brooklyn. Quoting here, a guard at an army garrison in Brooklyn called Immigration and Customs Enforcement on a pizza delivery man who made a delivery there last Friday. Now, Ecuadorian immigrant Pablo Villavicencio is in ICE custody pending removal from the country. This according to an agency spokeswoman, Rachel Young Yao. The detained man's wife, Sandra Chica, said he went to deliver pizza to Fort Hamilton and was asked for identification by the guard at the gate. He worked at Nonna Delia's Pizzeria in Queens. He produced a city identification card, but the official told him that he wanted to see a state driver's license. When he could not give that license, they called ICE on him. Here's the thing. The man was not a criminal. He had no criminal history. He was working at a very low-paid job in New York City, where I'm not even certain how he survives. He was working. He was not a problem. Here's the real thing. He showed himself to some white people, and those white people lost their damn minds because it's got nothing to do with criminals. It's got everything to do about the fact that these brown people, they're just everywhere. I give you Professor Eddie Glaude.
Let's be clear that Donald Trump is just an exaggerated indication of what's happening in the country. He's the tip of the iceberg. He's not the iceberg itself. We could talk about the politics. We could talk about what's happening in the White House and folks who are complicit with it. But for a lot of black folk in this country, it seems as if, in the generality, white people have lost their damn minds. And we have to raise our children in the midst of this. We have to. When they go, you know, those two black men in Starbucks, they were somebody's babies, even though they were grown men. That child that a police officer had hung up by his feet at the Waffle House, that's somebody's child. And so here we are in this environment where many of us in our past, in the histories of our families, have had people strung up from trees, have had to deal with legal segregation, have had to deal with ongoing insult and injury and harm. Find ourselves in a historic moment right now where we have to worry about raising our kids. We have to worry about whether or not they will have opportunity. So we could talk about the politics. There's something deeply insidious that's borderline evil here. And it's not just simply Donald Trump. It's about the moral monsters that are running around this country and claiming it as their own.
April Ryan got downright indignant this week with Sarah Huckabee Sanders, trying to get Sarah Huckabee Sanders to publicly recognize that the kneeling that happens in football has nothing to do with disrespect for America and disrespect for the flag. It has everything to do with the way that these African Americans are being treated by these incredibly oppressive police forces. I give you another example of the administration not seeing the forest because of the trees. And then, of course, Sarah Huckabee Sanders having a bad day.
Not about disrespecting the flag. Is the president aware of that, Sarah? Please, I understand you're going to Stephen, but I'm asking. There's an underlying issue, and it just keeps going about disrespect of the flag and soldiers. There are black and brown soldiers that fight in the military as well, who feel that taking a knee, bringing attention to police-involved shootings is something that this White House should deal with. Is the president aware that taking the knee is about police-involved shootings?
The president has made his position crystal clear, and that it's about, I let you rudely interrupt me and your colleague. I'm going to ask that you allow me to finish my answer. I would be happy to answer it if you would stop talking long enough to let me do that. The president has made his position crystal clear on this topic. He feels strongly that standing for our national anthem is something that we should do, something that matters to what makes our country special and unique and what sets us apart. He's not going to waver on that, and he's not going to apologize for it. And frankly, more than 70% of Americans agree with him on that matter. If you go back to what the original intent was, this has been made a political argument of which the president is not going to back down from, and he's been clear on it. Stephen, last question.
Deal with the
April, I've addressed your question. I'm not going to continue to engage with you, Stephen.
The NFL is now telling people they have to stand. Will the president deal with the issue of police-involved shootings?
I'm going to deal with the issue of addressing your colleague's question.
But it's a real question. Can you take it to the president and come back to us?
Stephen, go ahead.
Always happy to yield to a colleague, but let me ask you about Scott Pruitt.
Your speech is free, and your free speech is important, but it is only important when you are talking up about America. It is only important when Donald Trump sees it as important. So the Philadelphia Eagles were disinvited to the White House this week. The Philadelphia Eagles won the Super Bowl last year. And never during the season did any of them take a knee. But a whole bunch of them have realized how incredibly racist the president is and have said, you know what? We're good. We're not going to show up. And so, realizing what an optical nightmare that could be for the president went ahead and he went ahead and pulled his invitation to the Philadelphia Eagles and just said, it's because they refused to stand for us. Like, none of them took a knee. And Fox News, the propaganda arm of this White House, even went so far as to find pictures of the Philadelphia Eagles kneeling on the field and praying, and said that that was them taking a knee against America and against American soldiers. And then what he decided to have instead at the White House was a celebration of America and a celebration of the flag.
I think that what Sarah Huckabee Sanders just said right there in terms of the cake baker who won the Supreme Court case yesterday and the players kneeling, what she's saying seems to be, if the president agrees with what you're saying, then your free speech matters. If he doesn't agree with what you're saying, then your free speech is not free speech.
But a funny thing happened when Trump was having his pro-American thing at the White House. He had people singing the national anthem, and he stood in front of them. And then it appeared that he did not know the words to any of these patriotic songs that he thinks that everybody just watch the videos. It's like every 30th word, he sort of moves his lips a little bit. He doesn't. It seems like it's completely faked. And it seems like it's completely faked because he sees it as politically expedient. He sees it as something that's going to help him. And according to the AP this week, we found out that that is exactly the case.
The president told confidants he believes there's big overlap between football fans and his base, and he thinks voters will enthusiastically take his side instead of the players. He told one confidant yesterday he wants to periodically revive the anthem issue in coming months, figuring that will help Republicans in the midterm elections.
He doesn't really care. Flag, the anthem, the soldiers, America's standing in the world, our trade policy, you as a farmer, you as a steel worker, he does not care. He simply sees this as a way to get all of that growing army of morons that back him. And it is growing. He sees this as a way to get them and keep them on his side. He doesn't really care. And I'm having trouble understanding how people continue to fall for this and how everyone else just sort of stands aside and just goes, I can't handle this. It's too much. And yeah, that's the point. You're being assaulted. You're being assaulted with news and information. I try to be more mellow today because I understand the last thing you want to hear with when you're being assaulted with so much news is me screaming again. But I feel like this information is important. I feel like this point in history needs to be highlighted. I feel like this needs to be marked, and I feel like we need to recognize it because if we don't, we're just going to continue this slide to a dictatorship, to a banana republic. And eventually, we're all going to be standing around going, how in the hell did we get here? We recognize the history as it's taking place. We recognize the hallmarks, and we say, you know what? We've seen this movie before, and we need to act. Right now, there's not enough people acting. As a matter of fact, there's quite a few people tuning out. Don't tune out. Do not give up your country. You fought too hard for it. If you care about what happened in any of the world wars, if you care about what we've done in the past, any of it, you need to stay engaged. You need to stay involved and not simply get exhausted and turn it over to these folks. And I know how tough it is, but you need to stay in the game. Despair is not an option. We obviously have a long way to go, but the more you decide to sit this out, the longer that road is going to get. Thank you for being here. On the Fire You Can't Put Out, our official home is tfycpo.podbean.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/tfycpo. You can listen on the go. Find us on Google Play. Find us at the Podbean store. Individual episodes are available for download at the iTunes store on Podbean. Just search for The Fire You Can't Put Out. There you can also subscribe so that you never miss an episode. Questions, comments, hey, just a general statement, or you can email us at tfycpo.gmail.com. We work hard to not only inform and entertain, but also to keep an open dialogue with our growing listener base. So feel free to reach out to us. Thank you for listening. We are the fire you can't put out, and we will prevail, rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Kevin. Thank you for listening. This is Melvin signing off. Now that I woke you up, good morning.